podcast, Greater Than Yourself, Season 5. Thank you for listening. Do you have a question about sobriety, the 12 steps, sponsorship, or just want to contact someone from the podcast? Email us at podcastgreaterthanyourself@gmail.com or find us on Instagram at Dr_Silkworth or a podcast greater than yourself. If you're enjoying the podcast, please give us a rating on your podcast app and share the show with anyone who may benefit.
You're probably better off not knowing what TikTok is.
I think Facebook is more my speed. Like, that's, you know, like, that's where the kids go these days.
Recovery, so. West Sheboygan, the Facebook group.
Yeah, that's where I am. Oh, my God, it's true.
All right. Okay. Welcome back to a podcast greater than yourself. My name is John Barleycorn, and with me today, my co-host is Mrs. Jones.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good. I'm a nut.
Oh, okay. Still?
Yep.
Awesome. Very cool. I have to ask you, is the hair color new as of today? Or was...
Yes.
Okay. I was like, am I literally tripping? Because I thought, I just saw you yesterday.
You did just see me yesterday and it was different.
Yeah. I was just like, wait a second. This is breakneck turnaround here on hairdos.
I'm pulling a fast one on you.
What a nut. So I told you I've got one correct pronunciation in me. Joining us today, our guest for the very first time, a beloved friend, Scylla Ann Charybdis.
That's it.
Welcome.
Here in the South, thank you so much for correctly pronouncing my name.
Yeah.
Hi, Scylla.
Here in the South, if you want, you can call me Scylla or you can call me Scylla Ann.
Love it. And the coming to us live from the dirty South.
That's it.
Hot and sweaty. Yeah. I don't know how much you've heard of our show, but I know that you've been a part of the like AA social circle of a lot of the folks on the show for years. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Have you ever even heard the show?
I listened to you guys once, and it was when you had, it was years ago, and it involved my husband helping me get on the podcast, and I listened to it.
Help you with the app?
Yeah, I had to do all that, and something else was on it, and I listened to it as I was going to another meeting, and so I didn't really sit down and listen to it. And so I liked how y'all were joking around. Y'all were joking around about something that was, you know, never mind. That was
it. Okay. Perfect. So, yeah, I wanted to get you on the show for a while now, even though I'm heartbroken that you don't listen religiously, obviously, of course. It's fine.
Tried once years ago.
Yeah, but
it didn't take. I've been looking for an excuse to get you on, and I really wanted you on this season. We're trying to get more people who've never been on, and I can't think of a better place to be in the book than with you specifically than Dr. Bob's Nightmare. I know that it's a story that means a lot to you and that you really enjoy it. And so, that being said, that's what we're discussing today.
Yeah. And that Dr. Bob's Nightmare is my jam.
Yeah.
I could rename it as Mommy's Nightmare. Because, mm-hmm. man, when I read it and it just was like, it's all my story.
Yeah.
And so, I love it.
But were you fat as a pig? Or smelled like a pig? Really?
I was pretty fat when I came into AA, and I didn't really know I was that fat. I was just really blown up, and I lost 70 pounds. And so I got a job at the restaurant I work at now, and I dropped weight like that.
Yeah.
They were
like,
how are you losing all the... They were like, one of my friends was like, oh, it looks like you lost the weight. And I was like, Yeah, I probably lost like 10 pounds or something. And at the time, I didn't have a scale. And so I went by the gym and I'd lost 30 pounds. I've been trying to lose 5 pounds for 5 years, you know? And so I said, whoa. And so they said, well, how did you do it? And I was like, oh, I changed my lifestyle. I eat differently. I stopped drinking a quart of tequila a day, lady. I didn't tell her that, though.
Doesn't it feel like a bitch that alcohol has calories? Man, like, I remember trying to just, like, I wanted to do Weight Watchers or something, and I look up the number of points in a bottle of Chardonnay, and I'm like, that just is unfair.
Right. Yeah. You gotta start doing different experiments like Bob did. You gotta like, okay, yeah. So how do I get, well, I could just literally take an entire bushel of grapes and just mush them up and then crush up some pills in them. And that would maybe be... It would be called the pill and grape experiment. Were you a liquor drinker or like Bob?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was a liquor drinker. And I'd been going through, and I don't know if I said thank you for having me on here, because I was just kind of nervous in the beginning. So I just want to say thank you to all that.
Thank you for joining us.
Glad
you're
here.
Like I was like a beer drinker from the get-go, but the first thing I ever had where I actually felt the effects of alcohol was liquor. And so like I was so young, I didn't really know what was going on there. Like I would sneak shit out of my parents' liquor cabinet, and I always noticed that like the Martini Rossi, whatever, vermouth, that it was like never touched, right? Which like you know, with a little critical thinking, you probably realize it. Well, it's because it's either disgusting or like people don't drink it like that, you know. So I would just like pour that into like a diet soda and just like drink that, because it would produce the effect. It would give me this effect that like being at a party with high school friends where I would drink like 1.5 light beers didn't give me, because it didn't like do anything, you know. And so when I hear in Dr. Bob's story, when he's like, oh, well, I could drink all the beer I want because nobody gets drunk on beer. It's like, I think early in my drinking, I can relate with that, because I'm like, I never experienced what alcohol can do until I drank liquor. But then later, once I figured out, oh, I just got to drink more beer, I was such a beer hog. I was just way... So yeah, I mean, I don't have to tell you guys. I was about 100 pounds heavier than I am now when I came to AA. So definitely my beer experiment lasted a couple decades longer than Bob's, I think.
I was always one of those sitting at the bar when I did go to bars. I'd have a beer and then I'd just start drinking shots. So back, you know, I started with, I don't remember, but anyway. That's how I did it. I would have like 5 shots and have a half a drink of beer gone. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I think it's very fitting, given the story that we're discussing today, that we're just starting with drunk-a-logging.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, yeah, exactly. I know where you're at.
The story is like 85% drunk-a-log.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it ends fantastically,
but the ending is like very quick.
I know. Fun fact, or actually I'll ask a question. Which story is longer, Bill's story or Dr. Bob's nightmare? Don't check it.
I would say Bob's feels longer, but I think Bill's is more pages.
Bill's is longer.
Bill's story is like 16 pages and right. Bob's is like 10.
It feels long.
Yeah,
well, to me at least.
Which kind of like feels like, you know, those long years of drinking. Mm-hmm. Like the page about where he talks about 17 years of, you know, struggling. Yeah. It's like, good God, how did you live through that? And then I think I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. I did it for 20 years of,
all right,
you know, like experimentally inclined to drinking and combining other substances and just trying to stay alive.
Right.
Or yes. not.
Yeah.
And yeah, it says, yeah. Yeah. This routine went on without interruptions for 17 years.
just kind of glosses man. Over that, but it's like, I really needed to spend a little bit of time on the euphemistic way in which I refer to my the higher-ups at my university telling me to fuck off and go away. I love the way that he like pussyfoots around that. He's like, they happen to disagree yeah. with my opinion on, it's just like, dude, they yeah. kicked you out of school.
Struggle along without, you know, without my presence. Yes. You know, I know.
I love it. So funny. It's like that's one of the most quaint things about especially the first half of the story is like the way in which he uses this like folksy, small towny, old timey language to talk about yeah. Like just like very basic things that I don't think you need to like obfuscate with euphemistic language, you know?
Right. Like, where's the part where he talks about, oh, here it is. It's on 179. And I hope, Scylla, I'm not stepping on any of the passages that you want to share, but where he refers to getting hammered as getting well organized. What?
You know? No, it's great.
Are you it's drunk great. Right now?
No. Yeah, right.
No, just well organized.
I would say my comportment is well organized. after two pints that I hid everywhere except for the the toilet.
Yeah. And not your socks either.
Yeah. Well, not after Tugboat Annie. Which
exactly.
I'm guessing from context clues, that's like a thing that happens in that movie.
I think it's a play. And yes, it's a thing that happened in the play. So okay. I guess Anne was like, hello, you know, and Dr.
Show
Bob's
me your
like,
leg. She's like, pull up your pant leg.
the first time I read that, I thought that he was just like they're sitting at this play and he just like crossed his legs and the pant leg rode up enough that she's like, what, you know, and he's got a bottle there and his, but how, like, that doesn't seem like enough,
right?
Like I couldn't fit a big enough bottle in my sock.
No. See, this was my problem with flasks. I was like, people would give me flasks. Cause I, you know, that's the thing where you're just like every Christmas, someone's like, I know you're a drunk. You know, like basically the gift is like,
you seem like you
like yeah. I like your whole personality to me is that you drink alcohol. So here you go. But like every time I would own a flask, my first use of the flask would be like just covered in this acute awareness of like, this is not nearly enough alcohol. Like, what am I?
Yeah.
I need five of these.
Like, this isn't built for alcoholics.
We're going somewhere with 3.7 ounces of liquid. Like, what is this?
Yeah. Yeah. And, I used to hide it in my bra so I could be pretty good, you know, bam. And one day I came into my house. I came into my house and I came in the front door and my husband, I had on a tank top, so the top of the liquor bottle was sticking out. My husband just walked over to me and pulled out the liquor and just looked at me and I said, oh, thank you. And I just stuck it back in there. That was pretty much it.
That is amazing. Awesome. I love that. Like, you know, yeah, maybe I'm not being so sly, but, you know, this is still happening.
It wasn't a little airplane bottle either.
Right. Maybe. Yeah,
I love it.
I'm like, and I'm going to my page 31 experiences here, and I'm like, I never tried a bra.
she would bring up a lot of other things, I'm sure, if you walked into that.
Wearing a bra? Not wearing a bra.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, so, yeah, that's pretty funny.
Was there a specific passage reading at this time that stuck out to you? Scylla Ann?
Yes, of course.
Madam Charybdis?
Well, that whole part, how he's between a rock and a hard place, and then he love and love-hate relationship, and he swears off to not drink again, and then he ends up drinking. He can't stop. And that really brought back some memories for me, because like where he talks about going, after 3 years I wound up in the local hospital where they attempted to help me. I ended up going to therapy. And so of course when you go to therapy, they well, how much do you drink? And I'm like, oh no, I just a drink a day, maybe, you know, that's it. And I was having a rough time. And so it finally ended up with my therapist, where she said if I didn't go get treatment that she wouldn't help me anymore. And I had just gotten out of jail the night, you know, that week. And so there was no way I was going. Well, I spent the night in jail, not a long time, which that was long enough. And so I wasn't going anywhere where they had the chance to lock me up. And so things just, you know, things just kept getting worse from there. But I said, well, I guess I'm done with this. And so then somewhere in there, I ran over my mailbox. You know, I don't know. something changed, and anyway.
Awesome. You know, and that is how we tell our stories, isn't it? Like,
right?
You know, we slide in these details that I suppose normal drinkers would be like, "What?" And we're like, "Oh yeah, that checks out." You know, ran over a mailbox, bottle in your boobs. You know, it just we get it.
Yeah. Right. I love on that page, I think the thing of value in all of like the drunk logging in his story is like identifying with the insanity and like the delusion and denial and just like all of these examples of the alcoholic delusion that like this thing will fix it or this thing will make it different. I love that, like, further down on 175, when he says, with the passing of the 18th Amendment, I felt quite safe. It's like, the whole nation in which I live had to ban alcohol, had to make an amendment to the Constitution to ban alcohol for me to be like, all right, that'll, you know what I mean? It's like, that'll get me sober. And like,
yeah.
It still doesn't get him sober, you know? I love the logic there where it's like, I did so many things where that kind of logic seemed normal, you know? It was just like,
yep.
At some point I ran over my mailbox, I don't know. So anyway, they're banning alcohol, so I guess I won't drink anymore. That'll be good for me.
Yeah, I feel safe now. And he writes it in the way, like from the perspective of currently in delusion. You know, it doesn't sound like looking back, look how,
right,
you know, fucked up I was, which really takes you in it. Like, Jesus Christ, dude.
I think in that sense, it works well as like how we always talk about Bill's story being like a 12 step. You know?
Yeah.
It works well in that way.
Yeah, totally.
All right, John, I only have 1 minute. You have time for lightning 12 questions?
Let's do it.
All right, one. What season are we on?
5.
How many episodes are there this season?
37 episodes.
Fucking shit. Do you know how many episodes there have been prior to this season?
I want to say 70.
Would it surprise you to learn that there have been 84 episodes and 3 trailers prior to this season?
It would genuinely surprise me.
Does it take you a long time to plan, record, and edit the 84 episodes and 3 trailers that have been made prior to the season?
Yes, I've gotten a lot more timely with my editing, but it still takes quite a bit of time and energy. Yeah.
How long did it take you to make the 2 Uncle Randy and the Old Timer mixtape skits?
Those are cumulative, like. One session each, so like 1 day each, and then maybe another half of a session for my wife to do some vocals.
You could tell me any amount of time and I'd be like, that checks out. Who's the funniest co-host on the pod?
Hands down. Ted. No, it's Mrs. Jones. It's Mrs. Jones.
Oh, I thought I would beat you to it. Does the podcast make any money?
No.
Why not?
hard stop. No, we've never put out an ad. We've never put anything behind a paywall. It's not what the show's about. We're here to entertain and hopefully be helpful.
So why do you make the podcast then? If you're not going to make a bunch of money?
Well, it's fun. It marries, you know, for me, my loves of entertainment, spirituality, humor, and, you know, shooting the shit with my buddies. And people, interestingly enough, find it helpful and enjoy it.
Okay. Is it worth it?
Fuck yeah.
Is there a way for listeners to support the podcast?
Yes. You can tell anyone who you think might like it to listen to it. You can send it to your friends. You can write a review on your podcast app. You can do a rating. And now you can also financially send in a few bucks if you care to via Cash App.
That's APGTY pod.
Yeah.
APGTY POD.
That's right.
Cash App.
Yeah. You do a little dollar sign and then you go APGTY POD. And then you send whatever. Or you don't do that at all, and the podcast will still remain free.
Quite the sales pitch there, but fuck yeah. I mean, that is good. It will remain free.
Yeah.
Tight. All right, bonus question. Fuck, marry, kill. Clay, Agent X, or the guy from the Dopey podcast?
God damn it. That's just rude.
I'm like, there's no way he's going to answer this.
Not today, Ted.
That's too much.
Good chat.
Good times.
So,
yeah, and I'm just talking about the 15 years. That's just what really gets me. Oh, like I was getting some gas, and I'd read this twice on Saturday, and so I was thinking. And I was watching the gas go around, and it said, because he's, you know, he was born in 1879, so that kind of got me thinking about, we're 100 years difference, 120 years. So I was watching that gas thing go around, and it comes up to 1879. I'm like, I start thinking about that, and then it gets to 1976. I'm like, yeah, that might have been it. 1989, yeah, that might have been it. There, guys, is it? We're up to 19, you know, and just the way, just that watching that thing, click, 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 click. I can't believe how that it just went by like that.
Right.
All of it. Watching a gas thing go around.
Yeah. Watching time pass. Like it's torturous. I remember believing that one day at a time was AA solution, and that sounded terrible. I don't like today. Today is too long and I can't handle it. And then at some point I wake up and I'm like, oh, I've been drinking for a couple of decades.
Right.
You know, like I wasted my life away and it felt really slow, but suddenly I'm a lot older and this shit needs to stop and I can't stop.
Right. Were you in Margaritaville when you were wasting away?
Sorry. Oh, yeah. Oh, may he rest in peace.
May he riff in peace. Okay.
Merry time.
So,
yeah.
So I've got a little reading here.
No, I just turned the page and on 177. I will not take space to relate all my hospital or sanitarium experiences, period. And that's an entire paragraph.
I love it.
Yeah.
Incredible.
So good.
The reading I have was the fat as a pig thing. So I'm gonna choose something different. Just kidding.
Okay.
Not really. So probably not a shocker that my reading is from the last two pages of the chapter mm-hmm. of the story. The aforementioned solution portion. Now, I don't know, we'll get into it later, I guess. But I'm just going to read on 180, halfway down the page. It says, it's talking about when he met with Bill. He mm-hmm. gave me information about the subject of alcoholism, which was undoubtedly helpful. Okay, cool. Of far more importance was the fact that he was the first living human with whom I had ever talked, who knew what he was talking about in regard to alcoholism from actual experience. In other words, he talked my language. He knew all the answers, and certainly not because he had picked them up in his reading. We talked about this the other day in Black Rhino's International Big Book Study. in A Vision for You. Where it sticks out to me every single time I read A Vision for You, because it's really like the thing, it's the only reason that I gave AA another chance, you know, in quotes. I always feel weird when I say, oh, I gave AA a chance, you know what I mean? It's like,
it's like this proven organization that's been around, right, for, yeah. Yeah.
It's like, I can't, he can, I think I'll let him, you know, it's that kind of energy. It's like, like, oh, you're gonna let God. Okay, so yeah, but yeah, when I was like, okay, I'll give it a shot, the only reason that I was like, yeah, this course of action that I'm being asked to do, that, you know, like page 25 stuff seems drastic and I don't really want to do this stuff, the only reason that I was like, yeah, I'll try that, the person who approached me was talking from experience. Yeah. And I think more than just experience, because, you know, I had sat around and like commiserated with people in AA meetings who had similar experience to me hundreds of times prior to that, probably 1,000, you know. There was a time in my late teens and early 20s, I went to like 3 meetings a day sometimes.
You were a teenage big book thumper, huh?
I was. it's like Plan 9 from outer space, but for like really sad drunks in the late 90s. I was a teenage big book thumper. Yeah. So like I've had the experience of people who are not drinking being able to relate their experiences not drinking and having been problem drinkers. And I had the experience of people drinking out in the world, not in AA, maybe never have been to AA, who had all the problems that I had and who could talk my language, in quotes, right? And who could relate with me. But what I had never had was somebody who had the answers. This, you know, like he's talking about, this guy had the, yeah, answers, and he didn't have them because he had gone to a university and learned about stuff, or because he had, like, you know, been in some supervisory role at a clinic and like watched patients or anything like that. Like this guy had lived experience of drinking like that and then successfully maintaining sobriety. And like, when I say successful, I think we all know what I mean. I had never talked to someone who was recovered in AA and wasn't an asshole. I'll just say it like that, I guess, right? It's like everyone I had met who I didn't think was like lying about being sober was like manipulating me, wanted something from me, bossing me around in some way, there was some kind of catch. But the person who still sponsors me now, the person who, you know, reached me, who spoke my language, literally just did what they described here. Yeah. Like, we talked about our experiences, yeah, and he had answers as to, well, here's why I drank like that. Here's how it looked when I drank. Here's how it looked when I tried to stop drinking. Here's all the stuff. And then here is what I did to get to where I'm at now. And there was a light in his voice. There was warmth. There was energy. There was depth to the message that doctors and relatives and therapists hadn't been able to reach me with. And that certainly somebody like trying to tell me how to live my life when I walked into an AA meeting and like, you know, sit down and shut up and put the cotton in your mouth or whatever kind of vibe, certainly that person did not reach me on that level, right?
Right.
So right. Every time I read about the Bill and Bob thing, it hits me in that same place.
Yeah.
So it really resonates with me.
Yeah. I'm also struck by when you compare Dr. Bob's nightmare with the little brief description back in the foreword to the second edition, where it talks about how this physician repeatedly tried spiritual means to solve his problem. You know, Dr. Bob had tried, you know, he'd been going to meetings, he'd been going to Oxford group meetings, and yet he didn't fully understand what he was faced with. He didn't understand what alcoholism is, as Bill had described it. And so he didn't really have the willingness, you know, until he heard from somebody who had both those components, both had been a drunk, now sober. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. You know, like, I can't restore my own sanity. Now I'm going to go after this God thing, because I can see it working in you.
Yeah, absolutely. The idea being that, like how many times have you guys encountered people in AA where they're like almost cocksure with like, oh, I believe in God, I'm solid on God and all that stuff, right? And it's this idea, like toward the beginning of We Agnostics, first couple of pages, of like belief versus access to power, right? Where like, these are two different ideas. One is an experiential thing, and the other may not be. You know, the other may be just like, I have some sort of conception. But what you're talking about, Mrs. Jones, is achieving access to that thing, right? Because repeated attempts and living a spiritual life and having these moral convictions and a code of ethics and all that stuff means not that those things fail, but that I fail to have the power to access living that way, you know? So I always think that that's a really important part of his story too, because he's not coming in like this clueless, you know, what? God? Huh? You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And he's not like, screw God, I hate God. You know, it's not that. So it's not that he's like obstinate against what the solution will be that's offered. He's lacking a key component to what was the way that you said it, was willingness, right? Was that the word you used? The key thing that makes you willing is, oh, I actually have this thing, right?
The pain.
Yeah.
You can't take the pain anymore.
Right.
And going back to way back when, talking about the old timers, about put the, all that, you know, I had to have somebody finally say to me, I'm not signing your bullshit. Whatever your little whiny story is, if you want to get sober, this is the way we're doing it. And so then, that took a lot of manipulation through AA, because damn it, I had to find somebody that would sign my bullshit and think about how poor, pitiful mom I was, that I can't drink when I want to drink. And I got this, my son is like one of those pigs that look for truffles. He could smell it on me. He knew it all the time. My husband doesn't know anything, you know? And so that got very annoying.
Your husband just has the bra covered. Just that.
Yeah. It has to be real obvious.
Yeah. So it just got to be bad. And finally I got on the right program. And talking about the God thing, that was a real good thing too. I came in and said, I got the God thing. That's not it. Oh, wait, what? I'm going to have to do something to find this power? Really?
Yeah.
I don't get it by just driving up and parking my car and coming in. Right. You know? So that was a big awakening for me.
Hell yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. There's actually stuff I got to do.
Yeah. When I finally got some time, my sponsor said, look, you got to have this relationship right with your higher power, because that's what's going to keep you from drinking when your husband orders a drink. And so, of course, I was like, oh, he would never do that. And then I thought she just dreamed all that up. That was just like a good little rap for her that she brought up. But, you know, that's in the end of We More About Alcoholism. That's the last paragraph. And it wasn't until years later that I discovered she just didn't dream that up. It's actually in the book.
Sponsors are not that smart. They're really not.
It's great that you don't need to be.
Yes. Thank God.
What a relief.
Yeah. And he had all of that. He had the Oxford group, and he had the solution already. He had the spiritual awakening. But when Bill brought him what it was all about, just in simple words, then he could finally put it all together. Mm-hmm. And when he talked about how he just drank one drink and then he couldn't stop, he really realized it wasn't a moral thing. And I think for so long, that's what I thought I was, especially when I started going to church when my kid was little. I was all about it's just a moral thing. And it, just like all those pages say, how he noticed all the people were happy in church. And that's what I was trying so hard. And I was pulling it off. Nobody knew how much I drank. But in the end, it all came to a big halt when they caught me drunk at church volunteering and said, you know, you got to take a break from volunteering. You go fix yourself. And then you can come back. And I said, okay.
Scylla, I was just going to add, before you said that, I was just going to ask, did you ever drink at church?
Hell
and I
yeah.
love how
Hell
I yeah. love how you're caught drunk at church volunteering. So you better quit volunteering.
Stop helping people.
Brilliant.
Obviously, that's the piece that has to go.
Too much volunteering. I was like volunteering queen. They cut me back. They said, you go get fixed and come back in 6 months. And so I went to AA and I found everything. I fixed. Then I had self-knowledge. So I was driving around drinking with self-knowledge. That was my new hangout buddy.
So, yeah. No. Been there. For
you
sure.
tried all the things. You're very experimentally inclined.
Thank you. I carry the name well. Yes. Rock in a hard place. Love-hate relationship. That's me.
Yeah.
Ms. Jones, you have a reading you want to highlight?
I do. And you know, I purposely, I was like, I can't pick anything from 180 or 181 because I figured that would be too easy. Okay. So here's what I picked, although whatever. Okay. Bottom of page 178. My wife became deeply interested and he's talking about the Oxford group here. Mm-hmm. I should back up a little bit, the paragraph above that, where he says, I was thrown in with a crowd of people who attracted me because of their seeming poise, health, and happiness. That's the Oxford group.
Which sounds like so much cooler than I take the Oxford groups as having been.
Yeah, I don't...
It sounds like a bop, but like I get the vibe the Oxford groups were like some stuffy dicks, you know?
They were, yeah, they... Yeah, I get that vibe too. And what's interesting towards the end of that paragraph, Bob says, I learned that it was something of a spiritual nature, which did not appeal to me very much. So Bob, like he was churchy, but spiritual, right. Not so much. Yeah. Just very kind of an interesting.
So what the hell's this got to do with spiritual?
yeah, but then so the paragraph from my wife became deeply interested in the Oxford group, and it was her interest that sustained mine, though I at no time sensed that it might be an answer to my liquor problem. How my wife kept her faith and courage during all those years, I'll never know, but she did. If she had not, I know I would have been dead a long time ago. What I like about that paragraph is it helped me appreciate the chapter Two Wives before I had a more open mind about that chapter. Cause it was like, oh, it seems like Anne was demonstrating this tolerance and patience. And perhaps innately sense that like, okay, if I get angry and tell him what to do about his drinking, that's not going to work. And so she seemed to maintain this attitude that, that was ultimately helpful for Dr. Bob, not suggesting like you know, oh, stick around, little lady, you know, but, you know, in a codependent kind of way. But, you know, if my husband hadn't put up with me all those years, I don't know if I'd still be here. Mm. And not, I mean, it's just an interesting thing to think about. And again, not from a codependent vibe, but just like, someone seeing something in you and hanging in there until you recover is like beyond what I deserve. Mm. And how he kept his interest, I'll never know. But I'm glad that he did. And then he's, to finish up this paragraph, for some reason, we alcoholics seem to have the gift of picking out the world's finest women.
Yep.
Although, aren't they also, I mean, there's the argument that there's, you know, there's a whole program for people that...
You're trying to say they're fucked up too?
Alcoholics. What's that?
You're trying to say they're fucked up too?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Or right. Finest.
Or, yeah.
Yeah. Why they should be subjected to the tortures we inflict upon them, I cannot explain. Or maybe they're, you know, somehow... addicted to being treated that way so that they can have something to fix. I really talked myself into a pretzel there. Can I pick something else?
Perhaps they too were spiritually sick.
There you go.
They, like ourselves, yeah.
No,
I don't like their symptom, but I do like their symptoms because they
enable me. I just want to send shouts outs to my finest women. I agree. I feel the same way.
Plural?
Well, I mean, sure. No, I was just reading. But yeah, no. The things that I think about, particularly like doing amends with my wife, you know, you're like a week and a half, 2 weeks sober, and you're like, so let's sit down and have a talk. And, you know, probably the first clear-headed conversation about anything like that in maybe ever. Definitely the first without expectation, like coming to this person and just being like, hey, you know what? You have been sustaining me, and
yeah.
I don't know what I've done to deserve that. You know what I mean? Like, you know, being real about that. It does give me pause when I read this, because I'm like, yeah, this person absolutely was... in some sense, single-handedly responsible for me not having died a few times, right?
Yeah.
And like, thank you.
Right.
You also have some stuff, like the book's talking about, or like, you know, it gets into in the family afterward and all that stuff.
Right.
There's some other stuff going on there, but like, if we're looking in terms of just like objective kindness and like literally sustaining... There she goes. Literally, like, helping me not die from alcoholism. Like, I did not deserve all the help that my wife gave me in that area.
Right.
I certainly didn't earn it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I like the phrase, it was her interest that sustained mine. Mm-hmm. And although Anne, you know, is his wife and not an alcoholic, it does speak to, the impact we can have upon people.
Yeah.
You know, and it was Bill's experience that interested Dr. Bob. Like,
right.
we affect each other a great deal. No human power could have relieved my alcoholism, but thank God for my husband's support, and thank God for the people I met in Alcoholics Anonymous who described that uncontrolled drinking and were demonstrating being happy and sober at the same time, comfortable in their own skin.
Yeah. Right.
Yep. Yeah, it blew my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. How my marriage pretty much went on autopilot there for the last few years. And so I'm real thankful that it could go on autopilot and everything ran. It wasn't a big deal. I think he did better. He didn't really bother. He didn't really come out and say, "You're an alcoholic. You got to stop drinking." He knew that I had to make that decision. Mm-hmm. So I think that's how it just finally enough hit the fan.
Well, and talking about the importance of human to human connection on this and identification, the book talks about instances of recovery where that isn't part of it, and where like a program of action and a spiritual solution is not a part of it. And the way that it talks about it is, these occurrences are phenomena. It's just like, yeah. I don't know. It just fucking randomly magically happens sometimes in some weird book, you know, from 1379. Suddenly there's a guy who's like, well, he was struck sober. You know, it's just like, I don't know. I don't know what they did. So it's kind of like, well, thank fuck that I have the option to like meet someone who's recovered.
Right. It doesn't have to be random.
Right.
It doesn't have to be here and there once in a while.
I have an actual design on how to implement like a plan of action to recover from this thing. And I think the importance of that design starting with human identification one-to-one, whether it's you reading this book or you talking to someone, I think it can't be understated the fact that that's the first piece, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah, that identification is so vital, you know, which is why I get passionate about singleness of purpose, you know, and that we're talking about alcoholism.
Right. So you're one of the ones who thinks in the fifth edition, the stuff about pills should be removed from Bob's story, is what you're saying?
Absolutely. I think Dr. Bob's nightmare should be taken out of the book.
The part where Silkworth says alcoholic and drug addiction. Hey, cut. Hey, can you guys cut that? Cut.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
Scratch that.
I'm pretty sure, the fifth edition is going to add way more shit about drugs.
Oh my gosh. It's going to complicate. Yes. Well, I don't know for sure.
Rest in peace.
Bring on more stories. Sure.
Right. Yeah, sure.
Make the best of it because that's how we roll.
Yeah. You're not a listener to the show, so you won't know the difference.
I will be, though. I am going to be.
All right. Okay, 12 questions with our guest, Scylla and Charybdis. I said it right again. I'm having to close my eyes and do like the Johnny Carson, like when he would like, what was it called when he hold the envelope up? The Great Carcini or something? I don't remember.
Oh, anyway,
Yeah, I'm like,
he always had the,
Scylla and Charybdis. Okay, so 12 questions with our guest, the aforementioned thing I said. I don't know. Not going to do it again. Okay, question one. If you could change... Yeah. Stop laughing at me already. If you could change anything about the opening readings of most AA meetings, what would you change? You could add something, take something away, whatever.
They've all been so good to me, and it made me really think. So, I don't know. I think sometimes people, how it works, they don't take that seriously, and I it's probably all me. I don't want to change anything. I'm gonna have to say that.
All right. Final answer. Locking it in.
Locking it in.
Hey, all right.
Well, I just want to tell them, pay attention, get off your damn phone, and read it while they read it, and then you'll see how what the hell is going on in your fucking life.
Yeah.
I can't.
I've talked before about the experience.
So you'd add something.
The experience of like the difference in like meetings before smartphones and then like drinking for 15 years and coming back and when smartphones are ubiquitous and being like, I was literally like, wait, what the fuck is happening? It was just like everyone around me is just sitting like this with their phone up to their face. And then when it comes around to shares, they go, oh, what? Oh, yeah, okay. And they put their phone down. They're like, yeah, I'm Kimber and I'm an alcoholic addict. And it's just like, I'm sorry, what the fuck is happening? Now you're going to share? What the fuck, dude? Anyway, okay. My boomer moment there. Boomer rage coming out.
Yep. I'm with you.
Next question. What was the first line you highlighted in your big book?
Ooh.
I love that. Restless, irritable, and discontent. That was probably one. You know, man, I would love to know that. I don't really know. I really loved restless, irritable, and discontent. Is that?
That is correct.
I heard that. Yes. Okay.
That's correct. All right. This is a fun one. My questions are like either fun or annoying. I don't know. I'll let you be the judge.
Good.
Maybe this one will be annoying. I think it's fun. How do you organize your AA contacts in your phone? Like when you meet someone new through AA, what's their name in your phone?
Well, one of my sponsees, I knew her before she was my sponsee, and I knew she was just a troubled lady. And I wrote her name, and then I wrote neck tattoo after her name. And so she knows that's on my phone.
I love it.
And so I've never changed it.
I love
it. And now that we're close, and I do a lot of AA. I put one lady when I first was in AA, and I didn't want anybody to know that I was in AA. I put the woman's name, and I put Bible study. That was my code.
I love that. Love it.
So I still have her in my phone if that.
That's great.
That's awesome.
Bible study, awesome. That's like right up there with like sober classes or something.
Yeah. Or I put how many days I have. I'll put that down.
Yeah. Nice.
4-day neck tattoo. Next question. How do you define crosstalk?
What a good question.
Just if they say, I hate it when they go, not to crosstalk, and then they crosstalk.
That's the clearest definition.
That's how you know it's definitely crosstalk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What makes me love, makes me really sober, or I don't know. I don't know. Lots of times when I go to meetings, I just wish I had a mute button. And mute button and a timer, you know. But I can't be spoiled like that. I can't think I'm all that. Just that happens a lot when they say that, and then they start talking about whatever the last person talked about, and then they'll all pick up on that, and so then I have to, especially if I'm discussion leader, I have to throw something back in there to kind of bring it all back around. But it's just a meeting. It's an hour of my life. I'll be okay.
I love that question. That's a great question. So I'm going to move into the more tasteful portion of my questions.
Okay.
So fuck, marry, kill. Are you familiar with that type of question? Are you comfortable with that type of question?
I guess. Sounds okay.
You don't have to be.
I can skip it. I'm pretty easy going.
All right. So this is the thing. I wouldn't have asked you this if I just met you, but I've known you for like 3 years. So this is the type of question where there's three options and three people. Well, three subjects, right? You got to fuck one, marry one, and kill one. Okay.
Ooh, I love this.
Okay. All right. You like it. Okay, cool. So here are your choices. Fuck, marry, kill. The 12 and 12, daily reflections, living sober.
Okay. Daily reflections, I would kill it.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Yeah. I like that.
Okay. Yeah,
and then you got a marry one and you got a bone one.
What is my other choice? A living sober?
Living sober and the 12 and 12. So one of these is going to be a lifetime commitment, and one of them is just going to be a fling.
Okay. The fling is going to be living sober, and the lifetime commitment is going to be 12 and 12.
Okay. All right.
Beautiful.
I'm happy with any answer, so long as something gets killed. No, I'm down with that one.
Okay. Taylor Flexes. I can't stand it when I get a new sponsee and they're all about, I explained them a few things, and then they're all about that. Well, I explained them a few things. I never at 1 minute say anything about the fucking Daily Reflections. They come to me and they say, well, I read Daily Reflections today. And finally, I let them do that a couple times. And then I finally say, you know what? And when it's in step, when we're on 8 and 9, it's all about making amends, because those are the months. And that's why you kind of want to just kill yourself right now, because you're not there. You need to start it. You need to start at January. We start at January, and that happy stuff about getting it. Mm-hmm. If you want to read it,
I love Boom. It. I love it.
That's a good segue to my next question.
Okay.
What, if anything, have you ever suggested to a sponsee that you no longer suggest? Mm.
Come from hard school sponsoring, and it was like, call me every day, call me this time. You don't go to, you know, you were at the liquor store 10 minutes before 6, so you can call, you know, that kind of stuff. And so I was, I kind of play it by ear about the calling. And so I was really, wow, call me every day, you know. And a lot of people can't do that. I don't know what it is. And when I feel like I'm sponsoring my teenager who's 20, I had to let some things go because it was driving me nuts. Mm. And I do want to talk about, I've got to find a, like my sponsor, I keep a relationship with her. I do talk to her once a week. I see her at a meeting once a week. And so when I get a new person, every time I get a new person, I say, I'm going to do it this way. You know, I'm going to do it this way. And my main thing is, you know, what we all know, put their hand in the hands of God and go for it and get them through the steps. And I just kind of think that that's all I want to do.
Love it. Hell yeah.
Beautiful.
Okay. Would you say you spend more time with Step 11 in the morning or in the evening?
Ooh.
Yeah, that's a good one. I really do about both. I'm really all about that 11 at night. I'm on this new meeting. That's all they talk about. And so I've really learned how that can change my life. And if I let some of that go, and nice. I don't want to let that go. So oh, yeah. I think both.
Cool. Awesome.
Okay. If you could change one line in the first 164, what would it be?
Oh my gosh. Ooh. I don't, you know, there's some really funny ones that I just love. And it says, like, I think in Two Wives, it says, if she's difficult. Does it say that? Something like that. I always think, I always want to crack up.
Club her with this book.
Yeah.
No, like it says, don't let him hit you. Don't let him hit you with the book. I like that that's in there. That's a really important.
If they're difficult. Might be difficult. I don't think I'd change anything. That's another thing I get about. I just read the dang book, you know. I don't want you putting your whatever they all everybody does now, you know. But just read the book. I think that's a couple of the lines just crack me up. I wish Two Lies, if she's difficult. I think that's it. No, so I guess I don't know what to say about that. That's it.
There's actually one where I can't remember which one it is now, but there is absolutely a sentence that needs two commas. It does not have any commas, but it needs two commas. I think it's got to be in the low 80s. It's in the amends portion. Let me just waste a little time by looking for it here.
Sure. And while you're looking for it, I'm going to find there's, here it is. It's in the family afterwards, Scylla, where on towards the bottom of 127, we know there are difficult wives and families. But then it says, but the man who is getting over alcoholism must remember he did much to make them so.
Right.
So it's still the man's fault. So that can stay.
Another one is cheerfully see him through more sprees.
Right, you cheerfully.
Know, cheerfully, yeah. To me is
I'm convinced that Bill does not know what Bill did not know what cheerfully meant. Because, like, no, for real, look up the there's a handful.
Can we get the 1939 dictionary out for cheerfully, please?
Yeah, yeah, like well, on it's on 133. Like, if trouble arises, cheerfully capitalize it on as an opportunity. Yeah, like, yay, I'm in trouble. It's painful. Right. Yeah, that means growth's coming. And well, there's another part too. I don't know. There's like three places in the book where cheerfully is in there, and it's like, yep.
Cheerfully, nope, removed not. The fellow who took his own life on your burnt mattress from your home. Like, wait, Bill,
yeah,
you might want to
put the pom poms away. I'm curious, John, where the two comma place is, because I'll
have to remember. Ask Jane, because there was a so sometimes we do a thing Saturday mornings. Well, you know that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We do things Saturday mornings where we just, like, get on Zoom and we all read together and just kind of, like, talk about our experiences in the book. And I think that it was... I think it's in the amends portion. The way that my brain works, I know that it's on an odd page. I know that it's on the right side.
Right. Yeah.
I can't... And it's up at the top third of the page. I can't remember where it is. I'll ask her. I think she'll remember. But... She and I both locked into it on that one meeting. I was like, am I the only one who thinks there needs to be two commas here? And it's like, anyway, whatever.
That's amazing. Now yeah. I really need to know.
I'll ask her. Okay, next question. When was the last time you held a service position?
Oh, I've always got a service position, pretty much. I just got asked to be... alternate secretary, so that's kind of like I gotta meet with a person to find out all I gotta do, but I'm pretty much always in service.
Is that a lot of work?
The secretary thing?
Yeah.
Luckily, I explained to them that I do not know how to print up a form and do all that, and so one of my ladies is gonna help me with all that, and so she's like the recorder of the meeting. And so they just need somebody to stand up there and talk about what we've gone over and all that stuff, and I can handle all that. I just can't make up a form on what we talked about last week.
Right. The minutes or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have cleaning out at Clarkston. That's pretty easy to get involved. I do that every now and then when I'm not working. And I'm always in it. I really think that's going to that helps.
Cool. Right on.
Beautiful.
Thanks.
Okay. What? This is stupid. Okay. What? Is there a misquote that you hear that, like, that really gets under your skin?
A bunch of stuff. Not sure how to be.
Right on.
I have to watch it. I hate it when somebody goes, it's principles, not personality. No, it's principles. Spiritual principles, not spiritual progress. Yeah, it's
progress, not perfection. Not perfection. Yeah.
Spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection.
Right.
People
right.
always say that. It's progress, not perfection, and right. it doesn't say that anywhere in the big book.
Right.
Which my friend, my guru, you know, pointed that out to me, and so now I can get all like spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection. You know, so I like that, and I hate it when also they pointed out to me how when they read how it works, and when you say, "Are these extravagant promises?" and everybody says, "And we think not." It doesn't say anywhere in the book that everybody should read that out loud. And so somebody pointed that out to me. And so I'm like, I haven't said that to anybody yet, but I just kind of chilled out on that. You know, we think not.
Yeah.
And now we chant.
I think that is the biggest two things, mainly. Yeah. I like to study a lot and understand it.
Cool. All right. My last question. So for this question, I want you to imagine that you're walking into AA for the first time, right? Okay. So would you rather be loved until you can love yourself? Or be taken out back of the clubhouse and shot in the face. Okay, wait, that's not really the... No, the second half is actually be bossed around by someone who you asked for help.
In other words, beat me over the head with a big book.
Yes. So it's either I'm going to love you till you can love yourself, or I'm going to bully you.
Oh.
Which I equate to being shot in the face.
I guess I really looked for that. I needed to be bullied a little bit, beat over the head with a big book, because that's what made me really realize. I thought I told her she was my last stop. I was only had to go to figure it out. And then when she said that you need to go find another sponsor, because I wasn't doing what she said. That's when, because I was still drinking, I had to admit. So that's where I finally figured out I couldn't stop on my own. So that was the big thing.
Well, yeah.
Anyway,
the reason I like that question, the reason I wrote that question, is because I don't think that either extreme is good. So it's like,
yeah.
You're not the first person who's answered that way. And and I think it's interesting to hear what someone whose recovery I respect has to say about either side of it, you know? Because I could see either side of it being like, well, I think that might have helped me more, you know?
It's a good would you rather.
Right. Okay. Last question from Mrs. Jones.
Okay. When's the last time you collected a chip? Not asking for your milestone, like the number, just do you collect chips? And when's the last time you did?
In February. And hell yeah, I'm going to collect that chip. It's me and God, and it's worth it. And I really worked hard for that. And I like getting my chips. I have so many white chips. I keep finding them every now and then stashed in different places. I finally just put them all in one little bag, and I've got about 10. And like one year, I didn't even collect chips. I just said, fuck it, I'm going to drink and go to AA. We'll see what happens. And so that's what I did. And I think that's all.
That could make for a really fun poker night.
Did you stash white chips like you stashed bottles? Like, do you find them in your bra?
Yes, apparently I did.
They're all in the bra drawer.
You know, yeah. It's so good that nowadays I don't find bottles anywhere, and I've cleaned up my house enough to where I only had a couple of hiding places because I couldn't remember anything. So it's like the challenge. But I don't have to deal with any of that anymore.
Awesome. All right.
Beautiful.
Bonus question. How would you define the term big book thumper?
Boom, baby. I am the big book slayer. People ask me, why are you the big book slayer? And I say, well, I quit slaying mailboxes, so I decided to slay the big book. I think it's fun. Through you guys, I've learned that quoting this doesn't matter. It's knowing it in my heart, and I can pretty much find stuff. But to be able to tell somebody that, yeah, I could go into phenomena of craving and allergy and all that stuff and read it out of the book, but to just really look in your eyes and say, I couldn't stop drinking. I really couldn't, and I needed help. Yeah. I think that's it. So I don't know if that was even the right answer, but I love the big book, and I think that's where, you know, and now the 12 and 12 has kind of come back into my life, and so I'm really reading all that, and like, damn, I don't even think I read the 12 and 12 until I'm now sober. When I read the 12 and 12, I was like, oh my God, not this again. And so now I'm at a different place. And so I just love all the literature.
My condolences.
Which makes me big book slayer.
Hell yeah.
Awesome.
Awesome. Well, this is a great chat. Thank you so much for your time, Scylla and Charybdis.
Thank you so much.
I said it right.
You did.
Scylla and Charybdis.
Scylla and Charybdis. Yay.
Scylla Ann's not too far off from like a real name, I feel like.
Yeah, right. Right.
Priscilla.
Yeah, because like I have relatives named like Beulah and Doula. Like that's not very far off from that. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Syphilis and chlamydia.
Syphilis and Gyphilis.
Yeah,
they were twins. Syphilis and Gyphilis. All right, you guys. Well, thank you so much. This was lovely. It's always a pleasure to see you. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. And thank you so much for inviting me.
Hell yeah.
Thank you. It was fun.
This has been a podcast Greater Than Yourself.
A podcast Greater Than Yourself was created by recovered alcoholics. All involved in the creation of this podcast are active members of Alcoholics Anonymous who wish to carry the message of our own recovery to those who still suffer. We do not claim to represent Alcoholics Anonymous. All comments are from our own experiences as alcoholics who have recovered by following the directions for the 12 steps found in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks for listening.